Okay, so hello everyone. I'm today I'm the last speaker, hopefully not least. I'm very happy to be in Ljubljana. I'm actually moving here in 10 days, so if anyone is renting a room, please let me know. I will be researching a certain political party in Slovenia. And today I will be talking about one of the most interesting bands of the 1980s in former Yugoslavia, which is called Zabranjeno pušenje. And I have put here a question mark. I will explain it later why I did that, because it's not usual to put it that way. But what I will be discussing is the Yugoslav state censorship, how did it work, and I will provide these examples I did in this case study. It was a part of my master thesis I did at the University of Graz last year. Since I saw on the program that we have so participants that are not from the ex-Yugoslav countries, I just wanted to give a brief introduction, very, very brief one, on how did the Yugo policy on rock music work out. So after the Tito-Stalin split in 1948, Yugoslavia wanted to do its and to work out its own type of socialism, which was formulated through Tito's policy of the non-aligned movement, which came later on. So Yugoslavia witnessed a certain westernization in terms of the influence of foreign music, foreign movies, and here I have a picture that I put, Jukebox, that is the first rock magazine in Yugoslavia from the 1960s. Radina Vučetić, a Serbian historian, wrote about it, an excellent article, and also a good book that I really like, the title, Coca-Cola Socialism. It is in Serbian language. So yeah, rock music was used as the tool in the Cold War in terms of the influence of Anglo-American language and the style of life. And we have witnessed that in Yugoslavia in the 1960s, rock and roll started to slowly influence the society. However, the state did not witness at that time the how rock and roll turned out later on, and we have not seen at that time attacks on Josip Broz Tito or the Communist Party. Most of these songs and bands like Grupa 220 were mostly singing about love and some non-political things. Yeah, okay, so with the social political background, Yugoslavia entered the 1980s very much shocked and very much confused, because Josip Broz Tito died in 1980 and Edvard Kardelj a year before, who was the ideologist of the self-management system. So there was a definite lack of vision and strategy, as Sabrina Ramet stated. That after Tito's death, one could feel the instability in the country, and the relevant number of people were shocked that the whole system did not fall apart at the same moment. So Yugoslavia then implemented a new system which consisted of presidency of 8 members, which rotated from whatever republic they would come from, or the province as well, Kosovo and Vojvodina. And it was a one-year mandate, so there was a lack of strategy because people were shocked. They did not know, they were not prepared for Tito's death and how would the country move on. Parallel with the Tito's death, some criticism started to open up, not a big one, but step by step, and certain taboos have been opening up as well. Also, Yugoslavia witnessed, Dušan Bilandžić, a famous historian, he spoke about 3 crucial events that happened to Yugoslavia. The first event was, of course, the death of Tito and Kardelj and Vladimir Bakarić, who died also in 82. He was a Croatian communist. The main thing was the economic crisis, the foreign debt of Yugoslavia, and as a result of that, the inflation, which went very, very high. I think in 1984 it amounted to 300% or something like that. And also certain problems in Kosovo occurred, the most poor province in Yugoslavia, where in 1981 we had protests of Albanians, which resulted in some violent clashes with the police and the destabilization of the country. Also, the centralization-decentralization debate was going on because there were problems after the constitution in 74, which gave Yugoslavia basically the federal status. There were certain issues that certain republics wanted to discuss about. After Tito, regarding the censorship, I can say that was it stricter or was it less stricter? That is the thing I was dealing with in the thesis. And as Rajko mentioned earlier, Buldožer, that is definitely an important band. I stated that it is a pioneer of censorship, and I also quoted here as well as, for instance, Sejo Sekson from Zabranjeno Pušenje, who named their album Pljuni istini u oči, Spit the Truth in the Eyes, from 1975, I think, that was even pulled off the Yugoslav market due to its controversial songs, and they were basically a pioneer of something that was going to happen in the 1980s. Also, when I researched what did musicians think of the censorship in Yugoslavia, Vlada Divljanov Idoli said that after Tito's death the country was going through a liberalization process and that there was less censorship. While on the other hand, Sejo Sekson from Zabranjeno Pušenje argues that censorship after Tito's death became much stronger. That is something I also wanted to study here. Also, Sabrina Ramet argued that the Yugoslav policy towards rock music was very flexible. She named an example, for instance, of Riblja Čorba's Član Mafia, a member of the Mafia, where this Serbian rock band is making fun out of a members of Communist Party. However, what she forgot to mention was that that song was made in 1987 when Milošević came to power in Serbia, and in 1987 in Serbia there were definitely different circumstances than in 1980. Also, there was this trash commission that I need to mention. They had the job to analyze the records and to tax problematic records. There was this law against trash that was officially brought in 1971. However, the law remained unresolved and did not precisely approach the topic, so it was up to this commission that consisted of one composer, three public cultural workers and one poet to see what album is good or what album should be deducted tax or what album should be taxed due to the quality. However, they served as an advisory board for the Republican Ministry of Culture. Therefore, this leads to the conclusion that the censorship was basically decentralized in terms that every republic had its own, I would say every republic had its own system of how to censor something. Like Natalia Kyo notices a certain aspect regarding that policy, and she saw something also interesting, which is called recording tourism, that occurred between Slovenia, Croatia and Serbia. In practice, that would mean that if, for instance, Riblja Čorba could not get published in Serbia, they would go to Slovenia to get their album published. For instance, LSJ Kurtović went also to Slovenia to get published, Disciplina Kičme as well. So there were a lot of bands that went to the other Yugoslav states to get published because they have problems in their own country. Also, Anna Hoffman observed that the Yugoslav state avoided censorship by neglecting it and not implementing it into legal documents, which makes research on it much more complex. I will give you also a first example of censorship that I found, which is based on Zabranjeno Pušenje, the main band in the New Primitivism movement, and that was regarding their song Dan Republike, the Day of the Republic, which was celebrated as the Republic Day of Yugoslavia, 29th of November. A Sarajevo Discoton label They have found certain parts of the text as unsuitable, and because of that they had to edit certain lines. They did that very carefully, however, in order not to change the concept of the song. So, for instance, there was this line, si čeka u pasaž da pobjegnu van, everyone is waiting for the passport to leave the country, which of course had to be changed into neki čeka u pasaž da pobjegnu van, like some, not all. Because that paranoia was in the Sarajevo Diskoton label as well, and one needs to keep it and bear in mind that Bosnia was and still is a multicultural country where any sign of nationalism or rebellion against the Yugoslav state was clearly looked at. So it was much, they had much more creative freedom in Croatia with Siniša Škarica and Jugoton than in Sarajevo with the Diskoton. This is a quote, yeah, by Goran Bregović, who said that the new primitivism is the only authentic Yugoslav answer to punk. Seo Sexton from that band would say that that is true, that they were punkers, but they just did not carry the punk iconography. And this is also a typical picture of new primitivism, as they were reacting to real primitivism. Also, what one needs to know about Zabranjeno pušenje is what was also mentioned earlier, that this band disbanded in 1991, 1992 under very, very serious, well, under the war circumstances, and Nela Karajlić and some members of the band went to Belgrade to form their own Zabranjeno pušenje band, while on the other side, Seo Sexton, Elvis Kurtović and some other members went to Zagreb to form their own faction. These are different narratives about the wars, the war in Bosnia and the war in general on the territory of former Yugoslavia. And these are also opinions that cannot be put in one side in no way. Songs were a mix of specific humor, spirit and the philosophy of life, and that was very interesting to also to other Yugoslav countries and listeners, because they could feel the Sarajevo spirit and the specific stories from the Sarajevo streets which were put on the song. Yeah, this is what I went to this exhibition about new primitivism. It was staged, I think, in all of the capitals in former Yugoslavia. And then there was some interesting, like this is a quote from a Sarajevo Diskoton publisher, a letter to Seo Sexton that he needs to change certain lyrics. And now we are going to Crkomaršal incident, which is what formed the group and what was the biggest rock, arguably the biggest rock incident in Yugoslav history. That happened in Rijeka, and the group suffered heavy consequences because of that, due to the fact that the main singer Nela Karajlić figured out that this Marshall amplifier died, and then he yelled at the crowd, "Crko Marshall, the Marshall died," which was of course a reference to Marshal Tito, and that brought them huge problems. And I will now show you, because I have to be have to time management work out, so I will show you the reaction of the socialist youth in Rijeka regarding the Crkomaršal incident. The guy that signed that letter is now a successful lawyer in Rijeka, and they attacked them very harshly. After that incident, also, there was strong criticism in the newspaper. And these guys were like, they were, yeah, I'm 26, and they were 22 at the time. They were very young, and I can only imagine how was it hard for them to stay normal, being pressured so much at that time, being interrogated by the police and having a media lynch. I don't know how to phrase it better. that brought up huge consequences, and Nela Karajlić, the singer of the band, had to write an open letter to Politika in 1985 where he apologized and he explained his view. And they released the second album after that, but were greeted with an unbearable atmosphere accompanied with the silent boycott and the concert promoters that were afraid of working with them. Here's one more. And they were also forbidden on Radio Sarajevo due to these incidents. According to Pedro Rame, Zabranjeno Pušenje was the most controversial band of the New Wave era, with songs that criticized the political and economical context of Bosnia, Herzegovina and Yugoslavia while taunting Tito's legacy. However, I think that this is partially true. I think that Darko Glavan, the late music critic, had a better definition. He said that Zabranjeno Pušenje members were purposely provoking incidents, but always wanting to present the image that they are the mischievous boys who believe in the system. He added that he did not see in them a radical distance from the system as he did in Jasen Kohoura and Branimir Štulić from the bands Prljavo Kazalište and Azra. Tito's legacy was, in this interpretation, not an object of mocking. Instead, it was the corrupt officials, party apparatchiks without any vision for the country and the instability that basically prompted this. It was not directed at insulting at late Josip Broz Tito, but it was an attempt to tell the public the reality, and that's why I put the question mark at the beginning, that Tito has been gone for several years and that it is time to move on. I would also like to mention a third example of the censorship and the pressure on Zabranjeno Pušenje, which is the Manijak Agrokomerc incident. Now, it was their third album in 1987, Plotar Zemlje Safari, where Emir Kusturica, the famous music director, joined them to play the bass. And he directed the music video for the song Maniac. The song Maniac was a song about a maniac that is attacking women in a park. And they have made a music video in Belgrade in front of Siv, which was the head of the government of Yugoslavia at the time, where in that music video a corrupt politician was offering a girl some cookies that were called tops. And only a couple of months later the Agrokomerc affair started, which was one of the biggest affairs at that time and that destabilized the country. It was basically a charge on Fikret Abdić and like politics and high society involvement, corruption, and it struck Yugoslavia very much at that time. That happened only a couple of months after they made this music video, so they showed it only once on TV Sarajevo. No one has it. I tried everywhere to find this music video, but I cannot find it. Kusturica made it. And they pulled it off, and the song was banned, of course, also from the radio, just because Biscuit Tops were in that music video. And just to conclude on Zabranjeno Pušenje, what I read recently in Nela Karajlić's autobiography, he also mentioned that the police questioned him because of texts for Čejeni odlaze, which is a song about the problems in Kosovo, where he used the metaphor with Indians and two tribes, and one tribe is leaving. And then it's a blues, which also had a controversial text. And because of that, they had to sign for the Jugoton label, as I said earlier, because Sarajevo Discoton did not want to publish them. So I will just finish here and say that what I have seen working on this is that definitely the censorship was paranoid, inconsistent and confused. I can also say that it depended on the republic, that there was no united censorship system and that every republic actually had their own decisions on the issue. And it was a form of controlling Tito's legacy, although these officials were the ones to blame for the disappointment of the average citizen in the state of the country. And I hope that I did not take too much time. Am I doing good? Yeah. And I didn't practice, you know. So thank you for your attention, and I'll answer questions.